Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, liberty-loving patriots. Welcome to the Lucid Libertarian with Lori Ann Show. Please be sure to tune in Sunday nights from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Pacific Time, 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern, to discuss current events, news, and political opinion with Lucid Libertarian flair. Be prepared, folks. We often go into an optional extended third hour. This show advocates for liberty, freedom, our Constitution, Bill of Rights, and limited government, while speaking against corporate and government corruption, tyranny, and the globalist Great Reset agenda that undermines our precious American sovereignty. Discussions here are unscripted and free-flowing, so sometimes conversations wander off in unpredictable directions. Would you like to call in and share your thoughts and be part of the conversation? The number is 563-999-3698. Again, that is 563-999-3698. Press number 1 and you'll be added to the queue. Please also like and follow my Lucid Libertarian with Lori Ann page on Facebook. You can help me battle their freedom-loathing censorship by visiting my page regularly, along with reacting, commenting, and sharing my posts. Thank you so much for listening, but please sit tight and don't go anywhere. We'll be back in a few minutes to kick off the show.
Imagine waking up in a trunk. What is grooming? What if I told you we had a 40% increase of human and sex trafficking in our country due to COVID lockdowns? We already had high numbers to begin with. One's Purpose is an amazing organization pounding the pavement every day, helping these survivors get help. Unfortunately, they do not have the funding they need for a safe house. In the state of Oregon, we have zero safe houses for these survivors who have endured the most heinous of crimes. The time is now to get involved. The time is now to help stop human trafficking. Please go to onespurpose.com to get involved. If you need help and if you know someone who needs to get help, please contact 541-221-3448. Make a donation. Make a difference.
Open your eyes and see.
Hello. Inflation can be a tough crumpet to munch, but no one said this would be easy. We must band together and learn to sacrifice for the greater good of ushering in the new world order. Isn't that nice? But of course, I understand inflation can be especially hard if you're one of those... Paws? Was that the correct word? Reginald? Here are some smashing techniques you can use to survive inflation. First, try foregoing expensive medical care for your dog, cat, spouse, or least favorite child. Sometimes you have to make tough calls. But at least Susie's messed up teeth will be character building. Try not eating. Our 365-day fast can do wonders for your weight problem. Trust me. Cut out non-essentials like Netflix, internet, gas, clothing, and housing. Do you really need shelter and clothing? Sometimes less is more. I had to sell one of my houses. I only have four left. Remember that you only need one kidney, some of your lymph nodes, and most of your liver. Technically, you just need one eye, too. Just saying, if Crenshaw can do it, so can you. If you're struggling to pay $7 a gallon of gas, just buy a Tesla. Reginald, how much does that cost? Only $80,000. How pedestrian. I'll take nine, okay? Purchase the budget version of things instead of the name brand ones, like Transmorphers instead of Transformers, Marshmallow Mateys instead of Lucky Charms, and Compact Discs instead of a trip to the opera. Oh, I saw this in the most charming documentary last night. Try pulling off a daring heist of three Vegas casinos in one night. It's just crazy enough to work. And now, we come to the final suggestion on the list. Just die. If all else fails, you're too poor to live, so what's the point, really? Why weren't you just born rich, like me? Truly don't know what else to tell you except to stop being poor. There's our list of helpful tips to help you survive inflation. Got any other useful tips? Leave them in the comments down below. Until next time, toodaloo!
Did you just watch a video from the Babylon Bee? Then you are part of the problem. I'll bet you're gonna like, comment, subscribe, and hit that little bell button too, aren't you? You are a cisgendered, heteronormative aggressor. You are perpetuating problematic, toxic ideas of Anglo-normativity.
All right, everybody. Hello. Happy Sunday. You are tuned in to the Lucid Libertarian with Lorianne show. Thank you so much for tuning in tonight. We have a great show lined up. I am very honored to welcome back Richard Gage, AIA, as my very special guest. He was on my show on September 26th, my first guest, actually, that him followed up by Holland Vanden Nieuwenhof. That his last name always trips me up. And so also his wife and partner, Gail Gage, also is going to be joining the show. They'll call in probably in about 20 minutes. And Richard Gage, literally the 9/11 truth movement would not be the same without him. He's the former CEO of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, in addition to being the founder of it. And when he was on my show the first time, he had just broken free and unleashed himself from AE 9/11, and he has been independent. He has been doing his own thing, and he has been having some really awesome podcasts on his Richard Gage 911, Richard Gage Unleashed. And so he is from the San Francisco Bay Area. He's an architect. He's a member of the American Institute for Architects and founder and former CEO of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. He got interested in
researching the destruction of the World Trade Center high-rises after hearing the startling conclusions of a reluctant 9/11 researcher, David Ray Griffin, on the radio in 2006, which launched his own unyielding quest for the truth about 9/11. The organization he founded, AE 9/11 Truth, now numbers more than 3,500 architects and engineers demanding a new investigation into the destruction of all three World Trade Center high-rise buildings on 9/11. And so his wife and now partner, Dale Gage, she pretty much is right alongside him full-time. She is his right arm, sometimes his left arm. And so she's going to be really awesome to introduce to everybody on the show. Super excited. And, of course, waiting in the midst is Dahl Arnson, one of my favorite people to work with here on Internet Radio. Dahl Arnson is the host of Alaskan Patriot Network. Here on Blog Talk, you can find her and me on Fridays. I'm her sidekick on Fridays, and she is mine tonight, or one of my sidekicks, actually. her show is on Fridays on Blog Talk from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. Pacific time, and so it's always awesome to have her on. And then we also have, as well, in a second co-host seat is Alan McFarland. And he was also a previous guest on my show, and now he's being a guest co-host for the next few weeks at least. And he is the creator of The Laughing Libertarian. You can follow him on YouTube. He has some really awesome, like, 5-6 minute videos covering current events with a side of humor. So welcome on, Dahl, and welcome on, Alan.
Thank you, Oriane.
You're very welcome. I hope your day is going well today.
Fantabulous. I was giving Alan a second to pipe in there. Are you there, Alan?
Can you guys hear me?
Yes, sir. We can hear
excellent,
you.
Excellent.
Okay.
Excellent.
Awesome.
Excellent.
Awesome.
How
welcome
are you guys?
In. Groovy. So what are you guys up to today? Alan, were you able to put out a video this week, or I haven't actually looked. I know, I'm really bad. I haven't looked today.
No, you're good. It would have been a waste of your time. No, I was really, really busy at work all week, kind of juggling everything, and that was the ball I dropped. I actually took a week off of Faith, Family, and Politics. I took a week off of Laughing Libertarian. I really just I had to focus on the job that pays the bills, unfortunately.
Happens
that
to the best of us.
Right.
Yeah,
so I really
I heard you you had quite the week at work. You had to put in a lot of hours, and it just sort of wiped you out, and you got to take a little bit of a mental break once in a while. I hear you on that.
I really wanted to
But I'm glad that you were able to make it tonight.
Oh, yeah, I wasn't going to miss it. I'll fail on my own obligations. It's obligations to myself, you know.
Well, at least this is easy. You know, this is easy. You're just kind of kicking back, hanging out, you know, and you're not having to edit, you know, spend 8 or 10 hours editing.
That's fair.
Like you do with your video and stuff. So it's usually a pretty relaxing time here, hopefully. I don't put too much pressure on you.
No, not at all. And, this made me wonder how many more shows I want to do where I can just, you know, do this for 10 minutes on my own show. Instead of writing and editing.
Yeah. Takes pressure off.
So when I didn't catch the beginning of it. When are we expecting our guest?
Gail and Richard should be calling in about 6:30 Pacific time, 30 Eastern. So probably about like 23 or like not even 15 minutes from now. Because I wanted to, you know, give them a chance to eat a little dinner and stuff and relax, because I know that, you know, they're constantly on the go. And so, I just told them call them around 6:30, and we got them for at least an hour. Maybe we might be able to lure him to stay a little longer so we can take a couple callers perhaps and have some callers ask him some questions if he's up for it. So we'll find out, I guess. But we got him for at least an hour. And so how most people know about my show is when I have a special guest on, I do like to give them the floor pretty much for the first hour and have, you know, one-on-one conversation for the first hour. And if they stick around longer and they're up for it, then I will take callers and stuff. So you can certainly do that and we'll bring you on and all that. But, you know, just keep a listen out, you know. And once the hour is up, we'll see how he feels. And so anyway, Dahl, what are you up to today?
Well, it was a beautiful day. It still is a beautiful day here in Southeast Alaska. And I had a spectacular night last night. I went out with some girlfriends and I got together. I've been so busy too. Like last week was just insane with meetings and some call to action stuff that I'm doing here. But I came home. I was not too late, thank goodness, and walking the dog. And the Northern Lights came out. And we see the Northern Lights in Alaska, and not so much as I would like in Southeast Alaska because we have a lot of cloud cover. And it was just spectacular. And I got the whole family up, and because we go to bed early. I got the whole family up, and we stayed up and made some hot cocoa and hung out, watched the Northern Lights, and it's a beautiful day. Did a little bit of kayaking this morning, and we had a crab and prawn luncheon and outside because it was nice out. So that's
nice.
What we did. That was about it. Yeah, but it's just beautiful right now. It's only like 45 degrees, but you'd think there were kids down at the beach, and well, my neighbors, the kids next door, were out with their floaties.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, seriously? I wear a 7M. I wear
it's still
a 7 millimeter.
That,
yeah, no, I wear a Arctic dive suit to go in for anything. Hello. Or maybe I'm just a wuss. But, yeah, so we're getting ready for those really, really long days. The aurora forecast is really strong for tonight. We got some clear skies, so I think – even though it's school night, we're going to go ahead and probably go up, take a little nighttime hike up on the mountain. And the bears have come out, too. So that kind of makes that a little sketcho. But, oh, well. Oh, well.
Yeah, just be careful around the bears.
Yeah.
They're waking up from their spur, right? So they're hungry.
Yeah, they're really, yeah, they're really crabby. I did get some video last night, but it was kind of grainy. So I have my tripod and my batteries for the good setup charging. So I'm hoping to get some good pictures tonight. It's kind of like the whales. I've lived in Alaska for decades, literally, and I still stop and watch the whales or the sea lions or anything. And the Northern Lights I always get real excited about because it's like fireworks or something.
Yeah, like we hardly ever get Northern Lights down this far south here in Salem, Oregon. It's pretty a rare event. And then it always seems like when it does actually happen, it's too cloudy to even see them. So it was always kind of disappointing.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. I did want to try to sneak in a quick five-minute clip before Richard comes on. Dahl, I know you've heard it before. I'm not sure, Alan, if you have, but this is from the Corbett Report, The Truth About 9/11 in 5 Minutes. And it's such a great compilation. I've played it before, but I thought it would be a good intro before Richard calls in to get everybody in the 9/11 frame of mind. So if you guys don't mind, I'm going to crank that out real quick. It's only 5 minutes, and then that should give us a couple minutes leeway here before we prepare for Richard calling in. So why don't we do that, and we'll be right back in 5 minutes. But listen to this clip because, like I said, 9/11 truth in 5 minutes. he really runs it down. It's a great video, by the way, if you go to Corbett Report, 9/11 Truth in 5 minutes, then you can watch the video, of course, because, you know, with audio, you're missing the visuals. So away we go. 3, 2, 1, play.
On the morning of September 11, 2001, 19 men armed with box cutters directed by a man on dialysis in a cave fortress halfway around the world using a satellite phone and a laptop directed the most sophisticated penetration of the most heavily defended airspace in the world, overpowering the passengers and the military combat trained pilots on 4 commercial aircraft before flying those planes wildly off course for over an hour without being molested by a single fighter interceptor. These 19 hijackers, devout religious fundamentalists who like to drink alcohol, snort cocaine, and live with pink-haired strippers, managed to knock down 3 buildings with 2 planes in New York, while in Washington, a pilot who couldn't handle a single-engine Cessna was able to fly a 757 in an 8,000-foot descending 270-degree corkscrew turn to come exactly level with the ground, hitting the Pentagon in the budget analyst office where DOD staffers were working on the mystery of the $2.3 trillion that Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld had announced missing from the Pentagon's coffers in a press conference the day before, on September 10th, 2001. Luckily, the news anchors knew who did it within minutes.
Osama bin Laden.
The pundits knew within hours.
Osama bin Laden.
The administration knew within the day.
Terrorists who committed these acts and those who harbored them.
And the evidence literally fell into the FBI's lap.
That a hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
But for some reason, a bunch of crazy conspiracy theorists demanded an investigation into the greatest attack on American soil in history. That investigation was delayed, underfunded, set up to fail, a conflict of interest, and a cover-up from start to finish. It was based on testimony extracted through torture, the records of which were destroyed. It failed to mention the existence of WTC-7, Able Danger, PTEC, Sibel Edmonds, OBL and the CIA, and the drills of hijacked aircraft being flown into buildings that were being simulated at the precise same time that those events were actually happening. It was lied to by the Pentagon, the CIA, the Bush administration, and as for Bush and Cheney, well, no one knows what they told it because they testified in secret, off the record, not under oath, and behind closed doors. It didn't bother to look at who funded the attacks because that question is ultimately of little practical significance. Still, the 9/11 Commission did brilliantly, answering all of the questions the public had, except most of the victims' family members' questions, and pinned blame on all the people responsible, although no one so much as lost their job, determining the attacks were
failure of imagination.
Because
the way our government, at least, and I don't think the prior government that could envision flying airplanes in the buildings.
Except the Pentagon, FEMA, NORAD, and the NRO. The DIA destroyed 2.5 terabytes of data on Able Danger, but that's okay because it probably wasn't important. The SEC destroyed their records on the investigation into the insider trading before the attacks, but that's okay because destroying the records of the largest investigation in SEC history is just part of routine record keeping. NIST has classified the data that they used for their model of WTC-7's collapse, but that's okay because knowing how they made their model of the collapse would jeopardize public safety. The FBI has argued that all material related to their investigation of 9/11 should be kept secret from the public, but that's okay because the FBI probably has nothing to hide. This man never existed, nor is anything he had to say worthy of your attention, and if you say otherwise, you are a paranoid conspiracy theorist and deserve to be shunned by all of humanity. Likewise him, 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 and her. And her, and her, and him. Osama bin Laden lived in a cave fortress in the hills of Afghanistan, but somehow got away. Then he was hiding out in Tora Bora, but somehow got away. Then he lived in Abbottabad for years, taunting the most comprehensive intelligence dragnet employing the most sophisticated technology in the history of the world for a decade, releasing video after video with complete impunity and getting younger and younger as he did so, before finally being found in a daring SEAL team raid which wasn't recorded on video, in which he didn't resist or use his wife as a human shield, and in which these crack special forces operatives panicked and killed this unarmed man, supposedly the best source of intelligence about those dastardly terrorists on the entire planet. Then they dumped his body in the ocean before telling anyone about it. Then a couple dozen of that team's members died in a helicopter crash in Afghanistan. This is the story of 9/11, brought to you by the media which told you the hard truths about
his head could be seen to move violently forward.
And
they took the babies out of incubators.
And
mobile production facilities.
And
the rescue of Jessica Lynch.
If you have any questions about this story, you are a batshit, paranoid, tinfoil, dog-abusing baby hater and will be reviled by everyone. If you love your country and or freedom, happiness, rainbows, rock and roll, puppy dogs, apple pie, and your grandma, you will never ever express doubts about any part of this story to anyone. Ever. This has been a public service announcement by the Friends of the FBI, CIA, NSA, DIA, SEC, MSM, White House, NIST, and the 9/11 Commission. Because ignorance is strength.
Okay, and it looks like we are back. Lorianne? Alan?
I'm here. I don't think she reconnected yet.
Okay. All right. So, Lorianne is freshening up some stuff in the studio, getting us ready for our guests. We're going to be bringing them in very, very shortly. And she can reconnect. Alan and I will keep the show going.
Yes, we will. Pushing forward.
Yeah. Yeah, I see her in the chat room here. So we'll... Lorianne, we can't hear you, hon. Okay, she's still working on that, and as soon as she can hear us, she will pipe up. That's really strange. This never happens. So it looks like we have our guest here. I see you in the queue here, and we'll be bringing you in just one second. We're going to get Lorianne's audio situation fixed here. Yeah. I'm really super excited for this guest. I was not a part of the show that he was on prior. So this is really interesting stuff for me. And Alan, it sounds like you're kind of, I'm interested in it, and I've listened to a lot of stuff, and it completely, it makes sense to me. So I'm really looking forward to this.
Yeah, I want to hear everything here. I'd like to hear what he has to say.
Yeah, me too. And Richard, Lorianne apologizes, and she's typing to me right now, and she is trying to figure out what's going on with her mic. It was a little jumpy here just a second ago, so it should be up and running. She's our tech guru, so I imagine this won't take long. But yeah, to it, it's... there's a lot to that, and then also the Oklahoma City bombing. We were talking about the parallels with that and 9/11, the last show, briefly. So hopefully we'll get that. I'm not used to these little bumps here. It looks like she disconnected and is going to go ahead and call back in and reconnect. So folks, we apologize, and it's going to take just one second here. And
hey, doll, can you still hear me?
I can. Can you hear me?
I can. I'm sorry. It came across my screen and told me I was disconnected. So.
Yeah. No. She bumped out, and
gotcha.
We'll be back right back in. And so I just went ahead and pushed the ignore. Ignore that bump in there. Okay. All right, well, I'm going to go ahead while Lorianne is reconnecting, because I want to go ahead and have her bring her guest in. And so while she's doing that, we're going to go ahead and play just a couple little short, silly parody clips here. Okay, folks, here we go.
And now, Deep Thoughts by Jack Handy.
Sometimes when I feel like killing someone, I do a little trick to calm myself down. I'll go over to the person's house and ring the doorbell. When the person comes to the door, I'm gone. But you know what I've left on the porch? A jack-o'-lantern with a knife stuck in the side of its head with a note that says, "You." After that, I usually feel a lot better and no harm done.
I'm pretty sure that's what Lorianne wanted to do to her headset. Lorianne, you back with us?
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Yes, ma'am. Welcome back.
Yay! Yeah, I had not only reconnect my headset, but then I had to end the direct connect call and then reconnect to it because I could hear you, but you guys couldn't hear me. So with that technical difficulty out of the way, let's hope that that's the only technical difficulty that we have. I am going to go ahead and bring on Richard Gage. I see him holding his hand. He's been waiting patiently for the last 4 minutes. Hello, Richard. Welcome back.
Hi, Lorianne. Thanks, and great to be with you. And I've got my wife and assistant here, Ms. Gail Gage.
Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Hello, Gail. Yay.
It's really awesome to join you guys. Thank you so much for having us on.
Oh, you bet. Thank you guys both so much for joining me. And Gail, I definitely, like I said, wanted to have you on. You know, I know that you're fully engaged with Richard Gage's 9/11. You're his sidekick, his right hand. You're sometimes his left hand, I'm sure. And so I definitely wanted to welcome you on this time and get to know you a little bit as well, because I know that on the podcast you're on, and so people are starting to get familiar with seeing you. And so this is a really great thing to have both of you joining us today. How are you guys doing? Hopefully we can highlight Gail just for a short time to kind of pick her brain and what you're up to, how you're helping Richard out, some of the highlights from the last several months that you have been totally jumping in, you know, into the deep end on the 9/11 truth.
Mm-hmm.
Right on. But for some of your listeners who may not be aware, I will first mention that I am indeed flying solo from AE 9/11 Truth for the last 5 or so months, since September, when we had a mishap. And, Spike Lee changed his mind about showing a detailed interview about the explosive evidence of the destruction of all three World Trade Center skyscrapers on 9/11. And that was blamed rightly or wrongly, and we don't really know, on me. And so I am now outside of AE 9/11 Truth, and that's what gave us the opportunity, Gail and I, to work together to bring a much broader spectrum of information outside the World Trade Center, even, and even outside of the subject of 9/11. So we're expanding rapidly. We're still trying to find our way in this new environment that we've been launched into, and it's been a wild ride, right, Gail?
Yes, it has. Wonderful wild ride, though.
So tell people what we've been doing then.
Well, oh my gosh, we've got our podcasts that we have twice a week, and our webinars once a week. Lots of great guests, and then also Richard's been getting interviewed a lot, and he's had some opportunities for us to go travel so that he can do presentations, public presentations. That's just kind of in a nutshell. But as far as very, very recently, probably the very biggest, most exciting events that's happened with us recently is the Pentagon, the 9/11 Con Pentagon Conference, our very first live stream virtual conference. And it was on the Pentagon. We had 4 different experts that spoke during the day. It was a long day, too. It started at 10 in the morning and went till 10 at night. And, of course, there's all the hours of prep. And
yeah, and this was an incredible opportunity to bring together David Chandler, Barbara Honegger, Craig McKee, and even Thierry Maison. These are some of probably the top 4 researchers on the Pentagon, and they have been at odds with each other for over a decade. We brought them all together in one room, and we had 330 people tickets, which is a donation, really, to the film that we're making, which is also very exciting, 9/11 Crime Scenes, a courtroom.
Yes, very exciting. And the Pentagon was so much fun. It was just incredible. We're already working on our next one.
It was 12 hours, and they got to ask each other questions after an hour and a half presentation, and then 2 hours of answering questions from people who were watching. It was really incredible.
Yeah, it was. And the response afterwards was awesome also. There were so many people that were so appreciative and just really – were either hoping or wishing that somebody would do something similar or have an opportunity to be able to learn more about the Pentagon and the different theories. And, you know, 9/11, you know, as horrible as it was, people are a lot more familiar about the World Trade Center destruction than they are about the Pentagon destruction, it seems. So.
And Shanksville, which we're heading into next July 16th, most likely. And we're assembling speakers and experts, and if anybody out there knows any experts or researchers on the Pentagon, we would like to invite them to come and present on this particular quarterly conference.
Mm-hmm. We're also mulling around the idea of a conference that covers multiple false flags dating back way back when, up until very recently. So that's going to be really exciting and very interesting to learn. There's so many false flag events, unfortunately, inflicted upon humanity by the deep state.
And we'll do that on September 11th, along with a most likely a film festival, a 9/11 film festival.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and then, of course, we'll have a conference on 9/11.
I think Lori's trying to get a word in edgewise here. Go ahead, Lori.
Oh, no, I was just saying that sounds really awesome. Is the conference that you went to in this presentation about the Pentagon, is that all, is all of that available on your website to stream, or where can people find that and watch it if they want?
Yeah, we hosted it on our website, which is richardgage911.org. And you can't miss it. Just go to the website, richardgage911.org. You'll have an opportunity there to donate anywhere from $1 on up. And you can then get the link to watch the 12 hours all together if you want.
Yeah, and it was all live streamed. It was a virtual event. So we just did it from our home. Our home office. That's right. Which made it very, very, very convenient.
That makes sense, Lori.
That's fantastic. Yeah, absolutely. I definitely want listeners to know where to find you and where to find that, because you know you've been when you were with AE 9/11, you're primarily focused on the towers that came down, the three towers. And so now that you are independent and on your own and unleashed, now you can go into all these different areas, and I'm sure that, you know, what are some takeaways from that conference? Like, what did you learn about the Pentagon that you didn't already know before, that sort of thing?
So much, because I had avoided the Pentagon, actually, because every time I put my foot in those turbulent waters, I almost drowned. And if you make a comment on somebody's video, the other side will come down on you, and then you make a comment on their video, and the other side will come down on you, and that's been going on for 15 years with me. So I've tried to avoid it as a result. But now we've got all of them behaving nicely for perhaps the first time. some of them have been really, really tough on each other. And so I learned so much. I didn't know, for instance, that the official story it was backed up in part by the body parts that were so small, and they identified all the locations of all the various body parts. Yet on the other side of the story, we have witnesses who were in there cleaning it up, and they didn't see any, well, they saw body parts, excuse me. They didn't see any plane parts. So, there appeared to be plenty of body parts, but no plane parts inside the building. unless you actually go outside the exit hole. And then there are a few plane parts that are obviously plane parts, but there's questions on the other side about how those plane parts got there and what made that exit hole out of the C-ring in the Pentagon. That was fascinating because they all had different answers. Some say it was blown out by shaped charges. And I'm thinking, gosh, if a plane went in the Pentagon and it did take out that hole, according to the official story, why did it the pieces of the plane that made that hole in a trajectory from the entrance hole diagonally through to the exit hole, why didn't they keep going and damage the wall on the other side of the street, which is a real good question. There's lots of real good questions for everybody here. Another real good question that I had more questions than conclusions coming out of this conference, but I think the questions are excellent. For instance, the damage pattern to the columns outside and inside of the building are all in the direction of a going into the building, coming out of the building. If there were huge explosions, that would have blown a whole lot of stuff out of the building onto the lawn. We don't see a lot of stuff on the lawn. And there's no real grappling of the directionality of the force on these columns. And from the folks who deny that or show their evidence, have their position that there is no plane impact. And yet there's lots of evidence. It's hard to believe that a plane went in that hole, on the other hand, and yet they have a very specific set of answers as to exactly what happened to that plane and how it fit in that hole. It was fascinating, and I'm just going to try to digest it. And we only saw, you know, an hour and a half from each researcher, and there was a whole lot more that all of them have. There's a 5-hour presentation by the David Chandler, Wayne Coste group that I still haven't seen, only the hour and a half that they had time to present. So I hope that doesn't give you too confusing of an answer, but what do you think, Gail?
Well, I really had no information about the Pentagon other than I knew absolutely for sure that it, you know, was a false flag event, that it did not happen according to the official story, what our government told us. So I just tend to, if I don't have time to research something, I just kind of take a neutral stand and go, well, okay, there's all these possibilities. So for me, the most important thing is, you know, just the fact that we were lied to, our own government, you know, has inflicted this on us or allowed it to happen. And so that's what I focus on is just, to me, all of the different theories are awesome and they are all so compelling. I mean, when you watch one, okay, it's like, okay, now that I'm convinced of this. And then you watch the next one, it's like, oh my gosh, now I'm convinced of this one. So it can be very mind-boggling, but I just kind of stay on the fact that I know it was a false flag event.
And all of them agreed in the end that nothing should have hit the most defended building in the world, especially an hour after the Twin Towers were attacked. I mean, there's no excuse for that whatsoever. They had people up on the roof, theoretically, with Stinger missiles that could have shot anything out of the sky during that time in the nearby area. And that Hani Hanjour, who failed Cessna flying school, could have piloted this aircraft 270 degrees around the Pentagon, flying into what? The Department of the Army that was or Navy, I guess, that Naval Intelligence that was auditing the Pentagon looking for the $2.3 trillion that Donald Rumsfeld had announced the day before 9/11. In fact, that was missing from the Pentagon budget. And those auditors were killed, murdered. So, yeah, I don't think we can support the official story at all. Whether or not a plane hit that area is immaterial to the need for a real investigation.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It boggles my mind because, you know, like you said, the Pentagon is pretty heavily defended. And, I mean, and you got to know that even after the first plane hit the first tower, the Pentagon had to be on high alert. You know, when you go into like tracking the planes and all of that stuff that went on, it just made that wasn't, you know, that wasn't adequately protected. You know, fighters, why weren't fighters put up in the air right away? And, you know, wasn't it, you know, several years before that there was, you know, a pilot in a private plane or something that lost communication with the towers and, like, fighters were scrambled, you know, within minutes of that. And, you know, this happened a few years before that. And so it's like, you can't convince me that, you know, we were completely unaware and that there wasn't enough time to scramble jets to intercept some of these planes that were in communication or suspected of being hijacked you know, flying erratically, going off their charted path, things like that. You know, it's just mind-boggling to me when it comes to the Pentagon. And then, you know, so little footage of, you know, we're not really able to see. So whatever footage there was, the FBI came along and just snapped it all up everywhere, and there was very little that, you know, the public got to see before they confiscated all that footage from around that whole area. And so, you know, can't help but ask why. You know, why all of the cameras that are probably even 20 years ago would have been surrounding the Pentagon and businesses. You know, I think the one footage that we see is from a gas station nearby, and it's flash of an eye. That's all you see is something flash by, not some big plane. You know, you know, a big huge plane, I don't think would only be visible in like one or two frames of a video and then gone. You know, and completely. And then you look at. I'm not sure if you saw the DHS plane that just basically broke in half a few days ago. You know, and that kind of stuff leads me to go, okay, where's the rest of the plane then? How did a plane hit that building and not completely fall apart? How was half the plane not sticking out, you know, and bent or something? Like, how did it just get completely engulfed? You know, questions like that I can't help but ponder.
Yeah, and after the conference, we had no time to spare. We had to go on to our next set of interviews. What were they, Gail? The podcasts?
Oh, after the conference? Well, we had Holland Vandewolf. I butchered that. Vanden Neumannoff. He coached us on how to say it correctly. Writer and producer of A Noble Lie. And then after him, we had Art Olivier.
Well, wait, what is Noble Lie? The Noble Lie is all about the Oklahoma City bombing, which is yet another false flag operation that we play clips in a trailer of the film, an incredible job that he did, taking us step by step, showing us all the lies committed by the FBI and the media that day, even though they told the truth on several occasions and then later denied that truth, i.e. two bombs, i.e. two exploded bombs and then two or three unexploded bombs. It went on and on and on, just lie after lie after lie he exposed, He was awesome. What was the next one?
Well, and we had Art Olivier, the filmmaker of Operation Terror.
What about that one? Well, that was awesome because the Operation Terror was a fictional telling of what might have happened based on the truths that we do know that did happen that are lied about by the in the official narrative. And to make it more exciting, he even a scenario about what happened to the people from the planes based on an interesting set of eyewitness awareness that a plane landed in Cleveland that was taken to a far end of the runway. This is after all the planes were grounded and passengers were deboarded and a scene marched into a NASA hangar. So took a wild imagination of what happened inside that NASA hangar, which was interesting. Anyway, it was a fascinating, you know, film that wasn't as funded as it would all have liked it to have been. But it was very interesting, nevertheless.
Yeah, it was very, very interesting. And I'm going to list off some of the guests that we've had on our podcast, Richard Gage Unleashed. And, Richard, you can expound on any of them if you want to, and I'll read who
or
they
not,
are.
Or not, because we're taking all Lori's
time. I was going to say, if we do every single one.
Yeah.
No, that actually was a question I was going to ask you, is to highlight some of the guests that you've had on, because I know you've had some awesome
mm-hmm.
guests, to highlight some of them and, you know, what sort of insights that they may have given you, like I said, that you didn't really know before, and highlight some of that stuff. So you're reading my mind there.
Okay, well, the one of them that was really a big name, and we were really, really happy to have him as a guest. Well, we were happy to have all of our guests on, but is Foster Gamble of Thrive On. I don't know if your listeners are familiar with Foster Gamble. Just very powerful man with his research.
Made the comment, Thrive, the movie, Thrive, incredible, a solutions-based film.
Okay, and then we have Richard Grove, the creator of Autonomy.
And he has created a university to help people get free of the deep state and the slavery system that we've found ourselves in here. Incredible speaker and guest for us.
Yep. Next, we have Paul Craig Roberts, the author of How America Was Lost, From 9/11 to the Police Warfare State.
Yeah, he was in the Reagan administration and as an assistant secretary of the Treasury, I believe, and an incredible supporter of 9/11 truth also.
Yep. And then Dave Von Kleist, the director of two films, 9/11 in Plain Sight and 9/11 Ripple Effect.
And Dave has entertained us with his guitar as well. He sings freedom songs. He's been very, very dedicated. He's the one who put forth the research showing the unusual pod underneath the plane that was entering the building. And it could not have been a standard civilian aircraft because of that. And he did tests. Tests were done on the videos of this plane, proving that it indeed was a physical object mounted to the bottom of the plane on the right side. And curiously, it's in line with a flash that appeared on the building just prior, I mean, like immediately prior to the plane impact. Who knows what that was, but that pod was a physical object.
Yeah, I saw it in the videos. Next, we had Matthew Miller Scow, the director of Sacrificing Liberty. It's the 1967 attack by Israel on the USS Liberty is what that was about.
Another false flag operation that was conspired to between the U.S. government and the Israeli government to blame Egypt for during the war that Egypt was involved in with Israel. So the idea was to draw the U.S. into that war to take out Egypt, which would not have.
Okay, and then we were able to go down to the Anarchapoco conference down in Acapulco, Mexico in February for Richard to speak. They had him as a guest speaker again. We were there in 2020, the first time we were able to go as Richard speaking. It's an amazing event, those anarchists. And I'll let Richard explain a little bit about that. Anarchists and what that means, because it doesn't mean what most people think it does.
A lot of people think they wear black and they're violent, and no, that's Antifa, but the media wants everybody to think, oh, that's what anarchists do. Anyway, these anarchists were very peaceful and very freedom-minded and very health-minded, a fascinating group of people. And as a result, down there, after speaking, we had some interesting invitations.
Well, yes. Well, we had great connections. It gave Richard the opportunity to grab some of these amazing guest speakers that they had, aside from just Richard, that he was able to interview for our podcast, Richard Gage Unleashed. So we caught Dr. Rashid Batar of the Centers for Advanced Medicine and Dr. Andrew Kaufman. He's a MD that speaks out against the mainstream media industry, all the lies and everything about the disease we don't want and the supposed cure for it. I don't know how careful we have to be on your show about what we say, Lorianne. And then James Patrick.
Yeah, we are unscripted here. It is a free speech zone. I list my show as PG-13. So that people can feel a little bit more free to speak freely, and if the occasional profanity comes out, that's okay.
Well, no, not profanity, but as far as saying COVID and vaccinations, is that okay? Because if we say those words on some of the platforms we're on, we get booted off. So I didn't want to say have you.
Oh yeah, we've talked a lot about COVID, a lot about COVID and the scamdemic and plandemic.
Yes.
Free to express your opinion here.
Well, and that's one reason that conference, the Anarchapoco conference, was so amazing, is because everybody down there is awake and on the same page. They're just, you know, they all are aware that 9/11 is a false flag. Not everybody knew there was a third building, interestingly, but so the connections we made, one was that we were able to interview these great speakers, doctors, and then also another guy we interviewed was James Patrick. He's the director of Planet Lockdown. I don't know if any of you've seen that.
That's about the false lockdown of the false disease.
Yes.
And the false solution that is going to be very damaging to the health of half the world's population.
Yeah, and then, but also what happened while we were down there, the connections we made was a gentleman named Jamar James. He's a cryptocurrency expert. He's very well known in the industry, I guess, and he holds conferences, yearly conferences. And he invited Richard to be a speaker at his conference. So his conference is down in San Diego, California, and it's called the Mastermind Experience. It's a crypto conference, Mastermind Experience, where he's bringing 9/11 truth to the crypto world. So that's very exciting, and that's in May. And then also in May, Dr. Rashid Batar, who we interviewed at the Anarchapoco conference, he invited Richard to be a speaker in San Antonio, Texas at his, the Centers for the Advanced Medical Conference. There we go.
Fourth Annual International Conference on Advanced Medicine.
Yes, thank you. So we'll be going down to that at the very end of May, that Memorial Weekend.
Yeah, there's 1,000 doctors there. So they'll be hearing about 9/11 truth. So what about that? I mean, we're cross-pollinating. We're having that opportunity.
I love it, cross-pollinating.
In the medical world, I mean, they can wake the 9/11 truthers up because half of them are still asleep regarding the false flags of COVID and the vaccinations. And so, you know, we get heat sometimes when we talk about that. And it's like, come on, people, wake up and smell the roses, not the roses, the coffee. Anyway, it's not coffee either. What is it, Lorianne?
It's Kool-Aid. Yeah, wake up and smell the Kool-Aid.
Kool-Aid. It
amazes me. It especially when you get people that are really wised up to this whole pandemic and the government overreach, absolute lies, and the corruption that's going on, and they then somehow can accept that. But when it comes to 9/11 truth and the towers and the Pentagon and everything else and the Oklahoma City bombing and this whole history that our government has with deceit and corruption, and yet they find it so hard to believe, why do you believe the government in this case, in this case, in this other case, but not believe them about COVID? You know, it doesn't make any sense. If COVID woke up their eyes to how corrupt our government can be, then they really shouldn't be so, submissive or dismissive of the truth coming out about all of these other topics as well.
I know so many people in the 9/11 Truth Movement who have taken the vaccine. And in fact, two of them at least are very damaged as a result.
Yeah, very, very sad. Yes, and so those two conferences that he's going to be speaking at will fly down to San Antonio and down to San Diego. And we just recently, in fact, just last weekend, we made a trip down to Salem, Oregon. I don't know if your listeners are familiar with the Reawaken America Conference. It's a tour they're doing with General Michael Flynn, Mike Lindell, the Pillow Man. They've got all the big name.
Eric Trump came.
Yes, he showed up. That was exciting. And then
the main point is that these people are very conservative, and yet they're very awake about COVID. So it's a slice of it's not like CPAC. It's like a slice of CPAC of very awakened conservatives. And we had a table there, and curiously, I'd say 90% of them were also already aware of the 9/11 false flag. And our job was to make them aware of the resources they have to talk to others about it, i.e. what we have at RichardGage911.org. But also we found, 10% of the people or so didn't know. So we talked to them about Building 7, and they were very grateful to hear yet another not happy, but grateful to hear yet another false flag operation.
Yeah, I missed that event, and I'm kicking myself for missing it. I wish that I would have been able to attend it, and I wish that I would have known that you guys were there. I didn't know that you guys were there until after the fact, and it was 2 miles away from me, and it's put on by the church that's
cool.
Just up the road from me, the River Church. Was involved with that, and so and Pastor Lou and everybody, and so we just missed each other. You were already on your way back home before I realized that you were there, and we would have been able to have a chance if we would have known in advance. But next time.
So sorry, I didn't know you were in Salem, or I would have mentioned.
I think I knew you were in Oregon, but for some reason I had you placed over by the coast. I don't know why I thought that. But yeah. Awesome. Well,
probably because most of my pictures I take are from the coast.
That could be. And then he's been getting interviews, some really great interviews, too. The most recent was the show The Ripple Effect with Ricky Verandas. And then UK's George Galloway, he's on the Mother of All Talk Shows. He had Richard on, and he's had him on in the past.
He's huge, so we got a big following there. All these are posted, by the way, on our website.
Yes, and then with Vinny Eastwood of the Vinny Eastwood Show.
He's a delightful, a comedian. In fact, he's not politically correct though. So, for instance, he opens his show. It's the Vinny Eastwood Show, the lighter side of genocide. Which is, I mean, if you're going to be involved in it, in the genocidal psychopathic leadership of world communities, you might as well have some fun with it. Because it takes humor to kind of see these things for some time.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, our laughing libertarian Alan sidekick knows about using humor to spread truth.
That's what I do.
Hey, let's hear some.
No, I'm good. This is your floor right now.
Okay.
Well, the other person that's really recent is Sam Tripoli. And I think his podcast is the Tinfoil Hat, but I'm...
No, there's another one. He's got a new one. I forget what it's called. But he has... Turn off your cell phone, please. That's on our side. His co-host, his name is Brian, and he's... We red-pilled Brian together because they're this, like, you know, odd couple. One of them is very, very awake. The other one's halfway awake, but not on 9/11. But we had two separate shows. They had me back to cover the Twin Towers after the first one covered Building 7. And we were just going back and forth. And I actually had a live presentation. I was showing the graphics and everything. So we're going to put this both parts up on our website tomorrow when Gail gets the other part two show from them. And that's going to be really great to watch for a lot of people who are skeptics. And although it was a lot of, it was like, it wasn't anger, but it was like, you know, everybody's hogging the floor at once. It was really quite interesting.
Mm-hmm.
That's quite the lineup. That is quite the lineup.
A lot of stuff going on here. We got more interviews coming up. John Perkins, Confessions of an Economic Hitman, and several others. And we're making a film, though. It's called 9/11 Crime Scene to Courtroom. And this is the film that is the perfect sequel to the film that was made while I was at AE 9/11 Truth called The Unspeakable, which is about the story of four family members. And they didn't get a chance in that film, Dylan Avery, to bring much evidence to back up their very emotionally gripping stories about the 20-year fight for justice. But we're going to do that now because the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry, which I now sit on their board, is they're dedicated to getting the evidence into court, and they've taken our evidence, compiled it into 60 exhibits submitted to the U.S. attorney in Manhattan, and we've now sued them together to prove that they actually gave this information to a grand jury, special grand jury. So there's ongoing legal activity to make that happen, but we're also going to make a film which Mick Harrison is the litigation director for the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry, and we're going to go point counterpoint with the official statements by NIST and then what's really true and put it in a courtroom, and Mick will introduce why this evidence is so clear, irrefutable, just positive, they call it, and why what the grand jurors are going to be able to do with it. We'll be looking right into the camera, explaining to the grand jurors what it is that this evidence is, what it means, and who might be subpoenaed for more information that could be gained from we find suspect anyway. So that's a fascinating film, and I hope people will learn more about it on our website, richardgage911.org, and support the film, and also sign up for our free email newsletter so we can keep everybody apprised there And that's at richardgage911.org.
That sounds fantastic. And I hope that it's taken seriously. I don't see how it couldn't be taken seriously. If it goes to a grand jury and it's reviewed and, you know, also kind of make it more public, and hopefully some of the mass media would pick it up. Can't really rely on our mass media a whole lot, but independent journalists and stuff like that, I'm sure, would be very interested in that and report on it accurately.
I agree. They haven't taken the opportunity to do so. For instance, almost a year and a half ago or more now, we have the final report coming from the University of Alaska, one of the top forensic structural engineers in the country, Professor Leroy Halsey, has spent 4 years and $300,000 of the supporters' money from AE 911 Truth. And he concluded in this 135-page paper that's available free for downloading from WTCEvaluation.org, and completely disproves this theory that this building came down by normal office fires in a progressive collapse. He said, no way. All the columns had to have failed within a second and a half of each other for this building to come down uniformly, symmetrically, at free fall acceleration, which is what it did, and easily seen and measurable on the videos of the collapse of this third skyscraper that collapsed on 9/11 in the afternoon, World Trade Center Building 7. I mean, it's absolutely incredible what you see there, and he proved it. So I forgot how I got onto that, but it's another very important activity, and people can download that PDF. Yeah, we'll put it up on our website too.
Absolutely. I'm glad that you got into it because, you know, Building 7 is one of those things, like you said, there's still a surprising number of people out there that do not realize that three buildings came down that day in New York, not just Towers 1 and 2. And it's really compelling because, and I'd love for you to talk more about that NIST report and more about the official narrative and some of the evidence in particular of Building 7 that just flies in the face of it, because I know that that's kind of one of the highlights. And when you start to understand what happened with Building 7 coming down that was, you know, misreported and not really all that known, then that also leads to questioning the whole narrative about Twin Towers, about everything from that day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you want to go into that now?
Sure.
Or what were you? You're inviting me to do a detailed analysis.
I am.
I will. So you better be careful.
Be careful what you wish for. Okay, I've been warned.
And Gail, it will be right back. But I'm going to talk about this because Building 7 is what is the smoking gun of 9/11, and I talk to people first about it because it doesn't have the emotional trauma that the Twin Towers do, with people jumping out of the buildings and planes hitting them. I mean, we don't have the resistance to it. I ask people, for instance, at conferences that I go to, did you know a third tower came down on 9/11? And they look at me and they're like, I've tilted their computer, because most architects and engineers don't even know about the third worst structural failure in modern history. That's Building 7 after the Twin Towers. So, and I go, yeah, Building 7 came down by free fall. No plane hit it. No fires ever brought down a steel frame fireproof skyscraper in the history of these types of buildings. And yet you know, we have not two, but three of those types of buildings come down due to office fires. And in effect, normal office fires, even with the Twin Towers, after the planes broke some columns, the jet fuel burned up mostly outside the buildings, and even NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, tasked, by the way, by Congress to explain these collapses to the American people, they acknowledged that the rest of it, jet fuel, was gone in just 10 minutes. It was an hour after that that normal office fires caused the weakening of steel. And that's all disproven in my weekly webinar series, which, by the way, is free on YouTube. Just Google 9/11 and Architect's Guide. Better yet, on our website, richardgage911.org, there's a series of three webinars, which we just take the NIST theory apart in every one of these buildings, starting with Building 7 and then going to the explosiveness of the Twin Towers and then the extreme heat that NIST completely denies, and after completely omitting all references of it, even produced by FEMA before them in their final 2002 report. They actually had a metallurgical examination of the steel in all three buildings, citing hot temperature corrosion attack on the steel with liquid molten iron and sulfur, and yet they don't speculate or try to analyze or figure out where the sulfur came from, where the liquid molten iron came from. You know, that only comes from thermite. Thermite is an incendiary used by the military to cut through steel like a hot knife through butter. This is the only possible phenomena that can explain all of the evidence that we have available to us in the aftermath of the Twin Towers and even before the collapse of the South Tower. There's liquid molten iron pouring out of the South Tower minutes prior to its collapse, which is obviously not aluminum or lead or some other material. We can tell by the color of iron and steel what its temperature is. It's exceeding 2,500 degrees. Fires don't even get half that hot typically. So the official story narrative has a real problem when it comes to looking at and dealing with this evidence, which is why they don't very clearly. And so the grand jurors are also going to hear in this film about the first responders, 156 of whom were recorded orally on tape within a month after 9/11 of their specific experiences as being witnesses of explosions and flashes of light, most of which occur before the towers came down. This is completely omitted in the NIST reports. So it's incredible. They say like a belt, all these explosions going all the way around the building. Another one says like bombs going off, like when you detonate a building, pop, pop, pop. And the other one says like firecrackers, boom, 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 a flash of light, you know, down low in the building, one of them says. And they then say, and then the building came down. Not the building coming down causing this type of phenomena. This is extremely important. And we owe it to the great work of Graham McQueen, a professor from McMaster's University in Canada, who did all this research of the 500 first responders. He documents the explosion from 156 of them. And so then after those explosions happen, some say like a train running under my feet, then you have the top part dropping uniformly, symmetrically at first down without meeting the resistance that it should have from a cold, hard, intact steel below. It's just lost its structural capabilities, and that's what happens in controlled demolitions. We've all seen, like, the old hotels in Las Vegas, where they bring them down with big bangs and bright flashes. But in this case, we don't have as big bangs or as bright a flashes because these are not high-energy explosives like C4 and RDX, which can be used in controlled demolitions. So this is a quieter event, which is probably why they used thermite, which is an incendiary, not an explosive. So this is all quite fascinating, because then what happens is you have explosives going off also, which hurl 4-ton and 8-ton structural steel sections laterally out of the tower, landing 600 feet in every direction. So there's incredible force ejecting these materials. That is direct evidence of explosives. And they're impaling themselves in buildings all around them. But they're all outside the footprint. So if 95% or so of the steel, probably more like 99%, is ejected outside the footprint of each of these towers, we have to ask ourselves, what's crushing the building? And because it's not the steel. That's a third of the weight of this building, by the way. Another third of the weight of this building is the concrete. So maybe that's crushing the building, but no, there's no concrete floors stacked up these cases. I mean, it's a 110-story building. Each of these floors are an acre in size. We'd expect to see a few of them stacked up at the bottom, but we don't. We don't see 50. We don't see 10. We don't see one of them stacked up. They've been pulverized in midair, and that's what all the photos and videos show, pulverized concrete. In fact, that's what the dust surrounding all of Manhattan in a 3-square-mile area is. It's pulverized concrete. Up to 30% of the dust is pulverized concrete to a fine ash somehow. It's not able to crush the building if it's been pulverized to a fine ash and distributed from river to river across lower Manhattan. I mean, this is amazing, damning testimony to the official story. So there's nothing, there's not much, not even file cabinets available to crush the building, because there's not one of them that they found except for one in the basement. 10,000 steel file cabinets full of papers, they're missing. We don't know what happened to them. It's pulverized also. So this information is just damning, especially what they find afterward. I mean, the U.S. Geological Survey and R.J. Lee find and document very carefully. These are official sources, not conspiracy theorists. They find molten iron droplets in all the World Trade Center dust, small enough, like about a naked to the human eye. So where did they come from? Well, they are the byproduct of thermite. Molten iron is the byproduct of thermite, along with aluminum oxide, ash. So this is an incredible indictment, because they can't explain where all this molten iron comes from. There's billions of them. Up to 6% of the World Trade Center dust samples are molten iron droplets. Yet they don't know where they might have come from. They don't speculate. It's incredible. When you have an aerosolized liquid, it forms itself into these droplets that are spherical. That's just what aerosolized liquid does, because of the surface tension when it's dispersed like that. And so these, in this case, they cool and they fall, and they even fall on the cars and toasting the tops of cars around the World Trade Center. I mean, this is incredible evidence of the use of thermite. But they also find thermite in the dust samples themselves, unignited thermite. in the form of red-gray chips, red on one side, gray on the other. Niels Harrit and a team of eight international scientists documents in the peer-reviewed paper in the Bentham Open Chemical Physics Journal these curious red-gray chips that are attracted to a magnet. They thought they were paint, but they have a high iron content, so they're attracted to a magnet, and they zoom in 50,000 times and with a nuclear microscope, and they find iron oxide crystals and aluminum platelets at the nanoscale, 1,000 times smaller than the diameter of human hair. This is nanothermite, nanoparticles. This was just invented in the early 90s. So well, guess what happens, by the way, when they put these chips, red-gray chips, in a heater? They ignite at about 750 degrees Fahrenheit. What do they produce when they ignite? Molten iron microspheres with the same chemical signature as the molten iron microspheres found by USGS and R.J. Lee and others. And so we know exactly where those molten iron microspheres came from. They came from these red-gray chips. As if we didn't know, they're found attached to partially ignited red-gray chips. So you see, this is a self-corroborating set of repeatable experimental data that could be used to put a lot of people away for mass murder and treason.
Absolutely fascinating. I mean, really, like, yeah. And why was all that? It's like, you know, it's right there in your face kind of stuff, and yet completely ignored by the official story. Like, oh, yeah, we're not going to mention that. That doesn't fit. So let's just ignore it. Kind of seems like the whole philosophy behind that NIST report.
Yeah. The whole idea was to put it away for good and to back up the official story. That's why these people were brought in to replace the leadership at NIST. And NIST is underneath the Department of Commerce. It's simply an agency that's run by the executive branch of the U.S. government. The Bush administration replaced them, presumably for this reason.
Unreal. I mean, you know, and I just can't help but still wonder, you know, what it would have taken to plan and also execute everything that happened on 9/11. It's actually pretty mind-boggling how many people would have needed to be involved and how many people would have needed to shut up if they even dared say something. It's mind-boggling.
It's a problem. I mean, these black operations are compartmentalized. You know, one person doesn't know what somebody else who they aren't immediately working with is doing. They sign papers, but they're also threatened, I'm sure. So we haven't had anybody coming forth that we're aware of saying that, hey, I took part in mass murder and treason, and I'm feeling guilty. I'd love to see some of that testimony. That would be helpful, but those people wouldn't live very long. I mean, as a result of 9/11, you have the surveillance of all of our emails, telephone calls, illegally. Patriot Act, which was ready to go before 9/11, was signed after 9/11 without being read by any of the congresspersons other than perhaps Joe Biden, who had a hand in developing it. It is a large conspiracy, and that's what kind of woke me up. It would have to be the largest conspiracy ever and involve broad sectors of our government from top levels and top levels of industry and, of course, the media, which was tasked with covering it all up. Then I found out that the media was controlled by just corporations. Well, who sits on the board of directors of those corporations? The same people that sit on the boards of directors of the corporations in the oil industry, the arms industry, the insurance industry, the banking industry, all of whom profited enormously from 9/11. And here we are facing the same thing, a humongous operation with regard to the medical industry and the pharmaceutical industry in collusion to create a problem and manufacture the mandated solutions to it at an enormous profit by the pharmaceutical and even the hospitals, who were paid $13,000 to take in a COVID patient after they test positive and hospitalize them, and $37,000 if they die, which can only be seen as creating an incentive to kill them, which some of your guests, I believe, have come on and talked about the dangers of remdesivir and the ventilators in combination with each other, particularly.
Yes. Yes. Of course, you know, you can also speak to that if you like as well. I mean, to pull off, it's like if you don't think that this whole COVID thing is corrupt on every single level, then by now, you know, then you've been watching CNN for way too long. And it just goes back to, you know, if you're aware of the level of evil that has transpired with the result of COVID and the handling of it, then it becomes really hard to question the criticism and the quote-unquote conspiracy theory about 9/11 and the towers and everything that we've been talking about. It just and if you don't believe that thing could happen, that could the conspiracy could be that far-reaching, then just look at COVID. Look at how far-reaching the COVID narrative has been and the handling of it. And like you were saying, everything from putting people on the ventilators that were killing them to, you know, putting people into the nursing homes and creating an even worse problem. I mean, on down the line. And then you have trillions and trillions of dollars to pay for it with all of the COVID packages. And where did most of that money go? Well, go figure. It went to, you know, Big Pharma. It went to all of these different things. It's a complete payoff for conducting this whole huge, bigger than you can really imagine conspiracy.
And we have to pay for it.
Fraud.
And not only do we have to pay for it, if anything goes wrong with those vaccines, the side effects, and everything is going wrong with them, we can't sue the pharmaceutical companies. They don't have any liability for these suits, for the actions that they are responsible for. So the perfect business model. You have a built-in mandate for these false solutions, and you have no liability. No wonder they own 71% of the television, the mainstream media.
Yeah, media outlets. Mm-hmm.
I mean, 71% of their advertising comes from the pharmaceutical companies, which I didn't realize because I don't watch TV. But I was shocked to learn that.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm gonna jump in real quick.
Oh, go ahead.
The stall. And, you know, for example, Pfizer required some third world countries, I'm not going to say all third world, but some foreign entities and countries, in order to roll out their jab, they had to forfeit their military bases, put that up as collateral in the event that their people in their country rose up and ever tried to sue Pfizer. And I know Pfizer was definitely one of them. Like, unprecedented that there is a, so, you know, so they say that there's a pandemic, you know, and everybody's going to die, but wait, hold up. We require you to forfeit this to you in, you know, in the event that your people want to seek legal recourse. And that is unprecedented, and it's terrifying. And the Patriot Act pretty much rolled out the red carpet for all of this. You have an entire generation of young adults now that have never known anything but living under that. So that was my 2 cents.
Yeah, thanks so much. I didn't know that about the military bases as collateral. That's incredible. And the young people today don't question, apparently. They're not questioning that or care that they are being recorded. It's like, well, there's nothing I can do about it, you know. So, and I guess I'll just be careful what I say in my emails and telephone calls. Well, those of us who are waking up are not going to be, like on this phone call, censoring ourselves because we're angry and we want everybody else to know. But I notice that I do censor myself when I have optional conversations about these kinds of topics because I don't have any privacy, and I don't want the government listening to every word I choose to say, so I choose to not say some of them.
Well, they're listening anyway. I mean, exactly. They always are.
Well, that's
what
the problem.
What do you think all of the data centers are for? You know, they're made to just record and keep every single thing. If it can possibly be monitored, it will be monitored. And that's kind of what 9/11 turned in was this. It justified bringing about this whole entire apparatus of surveillance that has just gotten bigger and bigger and bigger over the last 20 years.
And now we self-censor because they put out that this is happening. And a lot of people in the 9/11 truth movement believe that Edward Snowden was a part of that telegraphing of what they're doing with regard to the listening in. And because, you know, he hasn't come out against given the truth about 9/11. In fact, he poo-pooed it. So it's like, how could he be so aware of what's going on in the NSA and not blow the whistle on 9/11 also. In fact, the opposite. Same with Julian Assange, actually. He has poo-pooed 9/11 truth. It's like, excuse me? He's in the position to know.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? Why is something so made so taboo where even when people know better, stay silent? It's really kind of baffling to me. And with that, I do want to respect your time, but we do have somebody that's been holding one of Alan's friends, or Alan and Joshua, and it's one of their friends, Lewis, that I haven't been introduced to before, but they hit me up. Are you up for taking a call or two?
We have about 5 more minutes, so let's do that.
Perfect. Okay, great. All right. So, Lewis, heads up, I am bringing you on.
Hello.
Hello, are you there? Hi, welcome.
Yes.
And thanks for calling in.
Yes, I wanted to talk about 911.
Yes.
Hello? And
yeah, can you hear us?
Well, I was in New York when it happened twice. Well, I was there in 93. When they try to blow it up in the basement garage, and I was there in 911. I used to work not too far from the Twin Towers. I used to work for Tribeca Film Center. Now, our belief in New York, the reason those towers came down is the fossil that they use on the plane, that is stronger than gasoline. That weakened the metal that holds those twin towers, and then the weight of the plane helped bring down those buildings. That's what we believe in New York. I was there when people were jumping out of the building, landing on the ground. They landed like sack of potatoes when they landed. The dirt was about a foot high, that when I would walk through it, I was walking through a foot. Buildings coming down brought Tower 7 down, the third building. And what we believe is those terrorists trained in the United States martial arts and all that before they went into those planes and took it over. And that's what happened in those, in that time. And it was bad. Because I had to walk from my job to the Brooklyn Bridge. I couldn't drive. They had everything held up. Giuliani was in the basement taking all the money that was in the Twin Towers before they came down. And he almost died in that building. But that's what we believe that happened in the Twin Towers with those planes. That fossil fuel, it's made out of kerosene and some other ingredients that they have there. And that's what weakened the metal in the Twin Towers to bring it down, as we believe in New York. And we believe that it was the United States who was involved in that.
How do you think the United States was involved in that, Lewis? You're pretty
they
much
had,
describing.
Well, all of us in New York know that the United States was helping these people and teaching them. They came to the United States, they trained in the United States, and then they took over those planes.
So I think what you're saying is that the U.S. was complicit in setting up these terrorists to hijack the planes and run them into the buildings, and that's what brought the towers down. Is all of that what you're saying?
Yeah. As we all believe in New York, it's a conspiracy. All the money, all the money was running through the United States through those twin towers from all over the world. So it was helping the Jews a lot too.
The evidence also shows that there was pre-planted high-energy explosives and incendiaries in all three of those buildings. We talked about that very specifically today on this show, and I'm wondering if you had a chance to hear that or not.
Yeah, I heard that. That building was already weakened from the first bomb that they put under the garage. They were still working in that building. I was across the street when it happened on 93. I was eating in the restaurant when everybody came running out of that building, and they were all full of smoke and everything. And they were telling us that they bombed the Twin Towers. It was already weakened. And then on the top, when those planes landed on top, the building went inside. All that fuel that was in those planes just kept burning down those metals and weakened the metal. And plus the top of the weight of the planes just brought that building down. And the same thing happened to the...
Yeah, thank you. That's very interesting. I'm going to suggest that even NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, says that the jet fuel was burned up 90% of it outside the towers. The rest of it was gone in 10 minutes. And it's an hour or more. Huh?
That's what they say, but no. That building, that plane went all the way in there, and that, all that plane had, it was full, as we believe. You know, these people, they make up stories, try to make themselves look good, but that's what really happened, and we believe that.
Well,
and
I,
then when
I
those
would
companies
like...
came down, it knocked down all the communications in New York, the phones, everything, and everybody thought it was gonna, we're gonna be attacked. And we was going to be invaded. That's when all the guns came out in New York City. Everybody had guns ready to protect the United New York.
Yeah, it was quite a day. I would like to encourage you to pick up some of the missing pieces that we didn't have time to talk about today that will clarify. And that is on my website, richardgage911.org, there is a hour and a half long documentary that has been made. I made it, and it includes 40 high-rise architects, structural engineers, metallurgists, chemists, physicists, controlled demolition experts, all laying out the evidence, which is points to the lies of the U.S. government. So we're on the same page there, but it'll give you additional information. RichardGage911.org. There's an evidence section in the web, in the menu.
That's more than, you know, on top of the fuel, there was a lot of chemicals all mixed in with all that in those buildings. And the building was already weakened from the bottom. And they haven't even finished fixing the bottom when that happened. So all that.
Well, thank you. Thank you for your call today. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Yeah, and then, you know, and yeah, those documentaries really go into the jet fuel aspect, the heat that it can generate in comparison to the heat that would have been needed to weaken the buildings uniformly, to come down uniformly the way they are. They really get into it. And as Richard was saying, with jet fuel, most of it exploded outside of the building, which was obvious, you know, the huge explosion when they first hit. You know, that explosion burned up most of that fuel. And so even if every single drop of the fuel was inside of the building, there's a lot of experts out there that say even that would not have generated enough heat. And then it also doesn't explain how World Trade Center 7 came down, because a plane didn't hit that. There was no jet fuel, and yet World Trade Center 7 came down uniformly.
The structure in 7, it was an old building. The structure was weak. And the vibration of the two towers coming down helped bring it down.
It was built in 1986, actually. It was much newer than the World Trade Center towers. And it met all the codes at the time. So NIST does not.
As they say.
Yeah. Well, okay. I think we have another call, Lorianne. We're going to have to go here pretty quick.
Yeah, I know. This time has gone by like super, 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 super fast. Lewis, thank you for calling in. And there are a couple of people that are raising their hands, Nathan and Pianchi. They are familiar. And so, Nathan and Pianchi, I'll bring you on, but try to keep it as brief as possible because we only have a few minutes left here before Richard needs to sign off. And Gail, hopefully you're still hanging out too as well. But so let's go ahead and bring Nathan and Pianchi on just for a few minutes, see if they have a quick comment or quick question for you, Richard, before we sign you off for the night. And so 3, 2, 1, Nathan first, and then Pianchi second. Hello, you two.
Hello, Lori. Hello, Richard.
Hey.
You know, Richard, I spent 40 years of my life putting buildings like that up. and a company that erect a structure steel building. Nobody asked me anything about that. The Pentagon, them people in the Pentagon don't know jack when it comes down to things like that. The iron workers that erected the structural steel, the ones that made the full penetration wells of the beams, top and bottom flanges at the columns, and those that spread the open web joists, the carry, the core tin metal decking for the lightweight concrete, they will be able to tell you a whole more about that than anything. I would have sat down on the lobby floor with Laurie and played games of pinochle, and you could have ran planes in at that elevation all day long. Those buildings wasn't going to come down from planes running into them. And you're absolutely right. The fuel, which is stored in wings, would have burned. And they wasn't storing fuel inside the building for the period of time it would have took for them to do all the necessary things that they had to do to plant the explosions, thermite contained in ceramics, where the webs would have burned away. And then they had explosions, which would have took out the top and bottom flanges. Then the beams would fall. They weren't going to pull away at the column from the full penetration wells, nor the bolt patterns. It just wasn't going to happen. Plus, steel is covered with a two-hour rating of fireproofing. And also, as the pancake theory just ain't going to work. Now, I think you said that the floor area was about an acre. That's about 40,000 square feet. I mean, you would have had four sections around 10,000 square foot each. You would have probably had eight trucks, flatbed trucks, per floor to bring out steel. That's 320,000 pounds. Now, if that floor on the top fell in unison all at one time, like dropping a slice of bread on the table, the floors below would absorb that energy and dissipated it down into the ground through the lateral bracing that was in the wall, the vertical bracing, not the lateral, the vertical bracing that was in the wall. That's how it would have happened. I would have played pinochle with you on the lobby floor too, Richard, you and Laurie. Planes did not bring those buildings down the way they said. Now, you really want to get into something else, the conspiracy and all that with the government and so forth. It had to be somebody because you had to have workers to come in during off hours to do the work that they need. And I would gather to bet you that those people are probably dead by now. They would have killed them. That's the same way the pharaoh was done when the workers built the pyramid. They killed them so they couldn't tell where the weak spots is so people could get into them and rob the tomb. So you made mention about you was absolutely right about the thing is that you don't have any lay people. You got these engineers and that's doing calculations. Engineers don't erect buildings. They do the calculations and things like that. They don't go out there in the field and put those things up. But if you find some people who put the buildings up, they would have told you, ain't no way in the world a pancake scenario caused all those floors to give like that. It was explosions. Explosions.
Yeah, and we have the evidence of the explosives and the incendiaries particularly. So it's completely a set of irrefutable and overwhelming evidence, the whole package, what you're saying.
You know another thing, too. I've seen a column shaft on one of the pictures. The column was cut on a bevel. It was a lower shaft. It was cut on a bevel 45 degrees so that the top shaft would slide past it as it came down. That's the way they do when they when they bring about demolition. The same thing would have been done where the beams went into the columns. Now, the exterior columns to the street, they were not carrying any floor load. The floor load was going the other way. You don't put floor load on the exterior columns that carry the mullions for the glass because the deflection in the steel would cause the glass to break. So that's not a design that would have been done. And another point, too, they got rid of the steel off of fast, didn't they, Richard?
Yeah, starting just 2 weeks after 9/11, the steel in Building 7, beginning with Building 7, was carted away at 400 truckloads a day, put on barges sent to China for recycling.
Wouldn't let nobody examine the steel. There, in fact, would have lied your evidence. Like I say, I started putting up structural steel buildings when I was 19 in the St. Louis and Southern Illinois region. And
exactly.
I started my own company. I started my own company doing it after about 25 years working in the trade because you can't go to Harvard or Yale to learn how to erect structural steel. And I erected buildings and bridges, and I know that structural steel don't act like that. From planes running into them. There's no way in the world. Them lower floors.
Right.
See, because another thing, too, the heavier steel is in the bottom floors. And as you go up, the weight, that means the thickness of the members gets smaller and smaller and smaller. You don't need the heavy members up at top. You don't want it to be top heavy. So.
Thanks to me. I appreciate the call very much. Very, very much. Thank you.
And you know another problem too, Richard? People don't know what the hell are you talking about. That's the big problem. Not only in this, but other aspects of life too.
What do you mean by that?
You're talking to ignorant people. Americans are not smart today. They don't take biology in class, so any old pandemic conspiracy come along, scare the hell out of them.
Yeah.
And they surely wouldn't know what you're talking about when you start talking about the things that incur when you're looking at those buildings coming down. And you're absolutely right. Building 7 was another ploy. That thing came down like a deck of cards. So that, and, you know, they didn't. You couldn't have the trade towers leaning where they're going to fall over on other buildings and tear stuff up. Because now you're getting into other liabilities. You can't tell those people in another building that they got to haul their debris away fast. You don't have no control over that. So whoever owned those two towers had to be in on it. And whoever owned building number 7 had to be in on the plan. Because if I had a building across the street and the tower fell over on it, you ain't taking my debris off. It's just like if a car run into your home. If they can't prove show liability for the damage that their car done, that car stays there until you are satisfied.
Exactly.
So
and then Bianchi, I'm gonna let Nathan try to get a
Thank
word
you.
In here before Richard has to go. But stick around because I still wanna continue the conversation even after Richard has to drop off. But I wanted to give Nathan a chance to ask a question or comment for Richard as well before letting him go. So, Nathan, you're up next. Are you there, Nathan? Did we catch you off guard? We can't hear you if you are. And he just dropped. So, never mind, I guess. I kind of heard that he was trying to say something, but then it was just like chop, chop, chop kind of a thing. But anyway.
Yeah. The audio was broke up.
Well, it was great connecting with you guys today. I really appreciate the opportunity. And
yes, and I do also. Thank you. It was fun.
We'll catch up with you.
Yes, it definitely was. I'm so happy that you guys both came on, and I thank you so much for your time and I definitely thank you for staying around longer than scheduled for. It's just one of those things where we get talking about it and an hour and a half just flies by. It feels like 10 minutes. And thanks for bearing with me earlier when I had my microphone problems and stuff too and couldn't bring you on right away. So, you know, definitely super happy that you guys came on. Definitely I want to pay attention to what you guys are up to next and all of the future guests that you have coming on. It really sounds very fantastic, and I'm so happy that you both are diving into all these other things and learning more about, like I said, the Pentagon and diving into all these other subjects that before you were not really able to speak freely about. So I will definitely be keeping you in mind. And then who knows, maybe around September, perhaps having you come back on again and regroup and do a 21st anniversary special of 9/11.
Hopefully that'll be the last one before our investigation. We'll see. We'll be crossing our fingers. Thanks so much, Lorianne. You take care, and take care, everybody there.
Yep. Bye-bye, you guys. Thank you.
You too, Richard. Bye. Thank you so much, Gail. Have a great night.
You know what else, Lori? On the plane, the supposed plane that ran into the Pentagon, could I speak on that?
Go for it, yeah.
Now, I'm very familiar with flying lightweight planes, you know, general aviation pilot. I never flown a commercial jet, but the principles of flight are the same. A commercial jet or any plane has to have, it rides on air, so it has to have air under the wings to carry it. A commercial jet is heavier, so it's going to need to have more air. It's got larger wings. Flying down the street at the height where you're knocking off the top, a light standard, is not enough air under your wings to hold you up unless you are flying at a very, very, very fast speed. And then, too, when a commercial jet, when it's flying normally, those planes are dropped 20 feet in air currents. So to say that it was a commercial jet that ran into the Pentagon just don't make any damn sense. An inexperienced pilot will not be able to hold a commercial jet at the length that it distance it had to come down to the altitude that it would need to be. Well, in this case, knocking off the top of light standards. What's the light standard, about 20 feet off the ground? You got to be kidding me. It's just, is not going to work like that. You don't have enough air under your wings to keep you in the air. It's just not there. And when planes land, they're using flaps to help them stay up. That's the way geese do when they land. And if you're flying at that type of speed to keep it up, the flaps would tear off.
Yeah, exactly. Which gets into like the Pentagon. How did a plane fly so fast, so low, to just completely almost disintegrate into the building like that? You know, even the most expert pilots have said there's no possible way that, you know, like they couldn't even do it. They, you know, pilots that have been flying large jetliners for decades have said, you know, it's just not possible to do that.
Hell, a Blue Angel would have a difficult time flying at that level. Or Air Force Thunderbird or Blue Angel. So that's a bunch of bull crap. I mean, they got, and you see that particular incident, of course,
yeah,
there was other
lift.
Ones.
Yeah, you'd have zero lift at that altitude.
Well, you're absolutely right. People that know the principles of flight know you wouldn't try something like that. That's crazy as hell. I wouldn't try that out in the ocean. But
yeah,
the thing is,
you might go into a spiral.
Well, you wouldn't go into a spiral. You wouldn't be able to hold yourself off. It wouldn't have enough air to hold itself off the ground. You got to have
air.
Yeah,
so it just tumble and then fall.
Yeah, those planes, when they're flying at normal altitude and they run into, like when they fly from off the water over to the land, and you got those wind turbulences, well, they
updraft.
May drop 20 feet.
Yeah.
May drop more than that, really. May drop 100 feet. And the passenger would be all panicking, think that they'd be calling on their savior and everything else. But, no, that was a big old – United States, America's been bamboozled, starting with 9/11, and then everything else that leads up to it with this election fraud. And as I said before, Americans is just not – today's Americans – it just don't have that type of they're not taught that. They're not taught it when in a school. They're not taught critical thinking. They're not talking how to analyze things. And that's why, I mean, we go on with this conversation forever. But if you dumb down your children, what do your children turn into? Dumb adults.
Well, and you've got all these dumb adults, Pianki, and then add on top of it that these young adults have known nothing but living under this tyranny of this Patriot Act and TSA and, you know, this whole kit and caboodle. They have literally been groomed from the crib for compliance.
Yeah, and how long ago was that? You don't have any, and as time go by, people are dying off. That won't be having a conversation like we're having. And these young ones would look at it as if it was the sinking of the Lusitania or something.
The what? They'd say, the what? Yeah.
So it's just, it's just a shame.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They're clueless, compliant, and ripe for harvest, you know, by this agenda. And we have complacently allowed it to happen. And, you know, like with my kids, as long as they were doing good in school and got good grades and participated and were socially, you know, weren't getting in trouble,
mm-hmm.
I didn't question anything, you know, at all. But now, and other parents too, and I tell people, don't be so hard on yourself. Your kids were getting good grades. You had no reason to believe that there was something else going on at the schools. And then that was the one good thing that came out of this, I think, are people having the opportunity to slow down and get a window into what their children are being taught. And don't want to say, oh, go ahead.
I've seen a speeding up with the advent of Obama. See, things have been going on slow. It's like the old cliche of putting the frog in the pot of water and turning the heat up slow. And actually, that's what. And then when you see something big happen, you get to look and say, "Man, you know, I've been watching something like this for a long time." And that's exactly what it was going on a little bit. But with the advent of Obama, it looked like it seemed like they just opened the corral and let everything out. And it's gung-ho because this is our last chance or something like that. You're seeing things in so many areas. You got it in the elections. You got it in street riots. You got it in these sexual events with gender confusion. You got it with the voting. Mm-hmm. You got it with the pandemic. That's five different things right there that have came upon all of a sudden. And even an astute society would have a difficult time dealing with that. And then what makes it worse yet is your news media is so deplorable. They have to be in on this stuff too. Because listen to the news.
They've weaponized misinformation and people take that as a, oh gosh, I'm sorry. It's been used or accepted as a mouthpiece for our government.
Yeah.
By the sheeple.
Yeah, as far as 9/11, those engineers, those architects, belong to those AIA, American Institute of Architects. The structural engineers belong to the American Institute of Steel Construction. Now, they would get kicked out. They would get kicked out if they talked. What they probably know, and then a lot of them really, only thing they can do is give it from the professional standpoint of what they do. But the people that know would be the ones that's out there erecting those structural steel buildings, if you can find some of them that's astute enough to say, hey, this is a bunch of bull crap. You just don't act like that.
Yeah. Exactly. Miss Florianne?
Yeah.
Oh, there she is. I just wanted to make sure that there was you're quiet. I wanted to make sure your mic wasn't misbehaving again.
Yeah,
that was
so.
Me.
But no, I've just been listening and like agreeing and letting you chime in and stuff. So yeah, I'm kind of deflating Richard Gage and stuff like, you know.
Yeah, no, it's me manipulating the switchboard.
Oh, okay, gotcha. All right.
You know,
yeah,
the sad thing with Mr. Gage.
Background noise.
The sad thing with Mr. Gage, the deep state would just let him die. There's been others. There's been Donald Stolz in St. Louis and others. But I used to go to their meetings at the library there in Clayton, maybe 10, 1 or 2 or 3, because I had done that work. But those people die. They'll just die out. And then who going to tell the story then? Then, more importantly, the people that's listening to it don't know what the heck is being talked about.
Yeah.
Exactly. Hide the truth long enough, and then the fake truth becomes the real truth generations later, because everything that goes against the official narrative has been buried, and that's not what they learn about schools. It's not in their textbooks. It's not any, you know, it's not part of their school assignments to write a report on and all that kind of stuff. You know, it's the twisting and manipulation of the truth to advance an agenda. And I think most of us know what that agenda is. We're talking, you know, Agenda 2050, Agenda 2035. We know the culprits, the Klaus Schwabs, the Council of Foreign Relations, everybody, all of them.
Yeah, all of them things is true, too. All these people can't be lying that talks about this. They can't be lying. I mean, it's, you hear one or two. Oh, yeah, okay. But damn near everybody you hear, one generation after another, is speaking about the same thing. So it has to be something to it. You know, I ain't never seen Bigfoot. But I know one thing. It's a whole lot of people around the world talk about they did see it. They saw something.
Yeah, something. I mean, and then, you know, and you always have to wonder, too, like, you know, if they're coming forward, you know, they know that they're going to be criticized. You know, so what is the motivation for, you know, speaking out the truth when they know they're going to be criticized? They know they're going to be possibly even fired from their jobs or, you know, harassed and things like that. I mean, they're just opening themselves up to a whole world of crap that nobody would really want to put up with, but to speak their truth is more compelling than the fear of the ramifications of speaking the truth.
It's just like these wars. You see John McCain, that we need to give weapons to Syrian moderates. Well, who in the hell is Syrian moderates? So basically what you're doing, Mr. McCain, is profiting off of the sale of weapons to supply guns to overthrow governments to some of these factions. Then they get set up, and they would be open up for U.S. aid and anybody else's aid. And you put that money in your pocket. Hell, the same people that's running Libya today was fighting the United States in Iraq. That's just what you have. It's nothing more than a big cluster, you know what. that's going on.
I have a phone call coming in, so I'm muted. Okay, now it stopped. Sorry. I don't know.
I guess
who it
I get
was,
a knock
but...
on the door here pretty soon.
Yeah.
I've had one of those.
Yeah.
Like, okay. Well, at least I have Nikita. She'll warn me if anybody's if there's a sudden onslaught of big black SUVs that are surrounding the house. At least my dog will give me some warning.
But you know, I'm gonna tell you the truth. The people see it had to be a crew that went in those towers to do that work to plant those charges, and also they had to drill the concrete because not that much concrete on those floors. They're lightweight concrete. That's why it's pulverized. If it was heavier, if it was structural concrete, it would have had reinforcement rods in it, and it would have been a different structure. What supported the floors, and from what I looked at the old plans, was what they call open web joists. And if you had one that was 20 foot long, Laurie, you could be on one end, I could be on the other. Both of us could pick it up and walk it wherever we wanted to. It's lightweight. And it deflects. It deflects when a load is on it or somebody walk across it. That's why they had lightweight concrete. Now, if it deflected too much, they would have had beams to carry it, and they would have put reinforcement rods, little round reinforcement rods with perforations on it so it gripped to the concrete. They would have had that in there. That would have been a different story then, and that wouldn't have pulverized. Them chunks would have been laying all over the place. And it just don't fall like that, because if you got a wire mesh in the concrete, it's not. It's going to hold it together, and it's going to, you know, it's just like, it's just like when you try to shake loose pie dough. It sticks. But lightweight concrete do pulverize because it's lightweight. There's nothing there. It's only about an inch and a half, 2 inches at the most thick. Just to carry people. So they had to have a crew to work all those floors. They didn't have to do all the floors. I guess they probably started at the 10th floor, maybe.
And I say, well, I don't know. I thought it was.
Yeah.
Somebody's talking. So they had to have a crew, Laurie, a crew that worked both buildings. Now, where are those people now? I think they did. I think they killed them.
Mm-hmm.
Because they would have talked. Somebody would have talked. You couldn't keep all of them mouths closed.
Yeah, I mean, either that or, you know, I suspect that it was something that was done over time. You know, it wasn't just like one crew came in and like in one day or overnight, you know, set all the charges and, you know, on all the floors necessary to make it be a uniform thing. I think that this probably happened over a long period of time, disguised as regular maintenance crews. Regular crews that would come in for just about anything, you know, from elevator maintenance to whatever, and could definitely be disguised and as regular maintenance kind of stuff that nobody would question, that kind of thing, and doing it over a period of time nonchalantly, that part of it would make sense because, you know, it would take, you know, if you look at controlled demolitions, you know, there's a lot of planning involved with controlled demolitions, even just for one building.
Absolutely.
And so, I mean, it takes time to plan that and place, you know, do the mathematics and know the structure of the building and know exactly where to place the charges and all that kind of stuff. And so, and that's just one building, much less three buildings.
Three buildings. You know what else is critical in that too? The explosions at the very top floor had to have a wire that ran all the way down to the ground and laterally to some place where it could be detonated. And every last one of those would have had to been. They would have had to been coordinated so that it would have been a sequential explosion, not all at once. And that had to run someplace where you had people who was in control of firing the mechanisms that caused the explosion. They would have set off the thermite first that burned through the steel, then the explosion, then after that things would have started falling.
Which is pretty much what we saw. You know,
yeah.
it was pretty, and what whistleblowers and witnesses experienced long before the buildings came down, you know, explosions and stuff happening at ground level or basement level before the towers came down and things. And, you know, it just more and more you look into it.
And the ones
the
at the basement level
the
wasn't going
story.
Yeah, the ones at the basement level wasn't going to cause no harm. That was probably molten metal that ran down those columns into the basement, because you could exploding in the basement is not going to cause no harm. What the hell, is the building going to fall over like King Kong or something? No, if they heard explosions downstairs, it was a distraction or something. But a lot of people
yeah.
were killed, and they don't care about killing people in order to get whatever it is the intention is to get it achieved.
Mm-hmm.
Another plane
and they achieved
supposed
a lot by doing it. You know,
look at all the
surveillance apparatus, funding
look at
for
the money
even
was
more
spent.
Military, more funding for the FBI, more funding for the CIA. I mean,
absolutely right.
Gosh, I mean, I cannot reiterate enough how much Corbett Report has such good information. I mean, documentaries on Corbett Report are really worth watching, from 9/11 whistleblowers, 9/11 Follow the Money, the 9/11 trillions, you know, just really gets into it. As a matter of fact, originally, when I first started the show in September, I played a lot of those things, you know, the 9/11 whistleblower segments and things. And I'd almost like to actually do that again because it is so good. In addition to the following the trillions and, you know, where'd all this money go and on down the line, it's just, you know, so much information in these documentaries that, like, I can't possibly remember all of it and speak to all of it. And it's one of those things where it's kind of like, oh, maybe I should try to play those again sometime and put on air, or at least encourage people to go to Corbett Report. And he has a breakdown of his documentaries so you can easily find
mm-hmm.
there. There's also the Best of Corbett Report, where he breaks down some of his best stuff, broken down into different categories, from, you know, the 9/11 towers all the way to COVID, all the way to all kinds of, you know, breaking down the
those
media.
Planes was remote control, I think. I don't think those terrorists would have been flew them planes into the building. I think they were remote control, because that's now you get loose with the plan. See, it wasn't no auditorium of people that agreed to do this. It was a few people in each segment. You got people on the think tank on bringing the building down. You have people on the think tank of the planes, each plane that occurred, even the one was at Shanksville that hit the ground and no debris
mm-hmm.
or nothing, just a hole in the ground that had been
I know.
Neatly manicured.
Apple TV. There is a documentary on Apple Plus TV that I watched recently that was done last year, and I watched it recently, about 9/11, and it's focused on the, you know, like President Bush, the war cabinet, basically. I'm forgetting the actual name off the top of my head. Let me look it up. But I watched it, and it was like they didn't even bother, like, GIing anything in there as far as like plane debris in Pennsylvania. You know, they show these shots of, you know, the broken up ground where, you know, something obviously crashed there, but like no explained everything. You know, this is like this aerial image that they're, you know, showing on this documentary that's supposed to be, you know, about, you know, President Bush and the War Cabinet and everything that happened. And it just amazes me. I'm like, you know, they didn't even bother including any kind of photograph.
He was in a great school, I think,
any plane
in St.
debris
Louis
at all. No wings, no tail, no broken up, nothing. Just a crater in the ground, you know, and it's like that doesn't happen. And when planes crash, they don't leave nothing behind.
He was in a school in St. Louis on Chambers Road, I think, when that happened, reading with some kids in kindergarten. Bush Jr.
Yeah, he was in Florida. Yeah, he was in Florida.
Oh, he was in Florida.
Happened.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought.
Yeah,
it was
I think
Louis.
It was a school in Florida. Yeah.
But like I said, you had each of those operations ran by a handful of people, not a lot of people, a handful of people. Because you invite a lot of people, it's hard to control them. And another thing, where happened to the passenger that was booked for that flight? That crashed there in Pennsylvania. Where are they at?
Good question.
I mean, they kill them and dispose of the bodies. Where are they at? It wasn't supposed to have been 93 people on that plane. Where are they at?
Yeah, like where's the bodies?
Exactly.
Where's, you know, where's all the luggage? You know, all the stuff that would have been ejected from the plane pocket,
yeah.
You know, hitting the ground and breaking up. And, you know, there just would have been a pile of debris everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah, those engines weren't going to just disappear. Those were made out of titanium. And much of the structure of the plane, too, they don't make them out of aluminum. Sometimes they do. They surely don't make them out of steel. So where is that material at? The engines. There at the Pentagon, they had an engine laying out on the lawn. Looked like somebody just dropped it off to me.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
what we
same
have
thing
witnessed.
With the Pentagon. Where is all the plane debris there? You know, and then plus like you see pictures too of like planes that get dented just from a, you know, running into a bird in flight, you know, and it's like that. You know,
tear the windshield out.
Exactly.
Like
that
horror-headed birds.
You know, for a plane to literally pretty much stay intact to not have a whole bunch of it outside of the Pentagon. And again, this documentary, same thing, when they were showing the Pentagon, I'm looking and I'm like, I don't see no plane debris. You know, how does a plane with these huge wingspan create a circle of a where it supposedly hit, like almost perfect circle? The plane, the wings breaking off and, you know, things like that. It just doesn't make sense. The wings would have definitely broken off or torn off. I don't think that it would be possible for a plane to be completely submerged into the Pentagon
disappear.
The tail sticking out and stuff.
It's like open, like the Alibaba and the 43, and they ride up to the rock, say open sesame, the rock move, all of them ride in, and the rock close. Where'd he go? Yeah, that's the big bamboozle, and it's continuing to go on. And America is going to have to straighten that mess out themselves. They have to have some sort of, you hear the word civil war. But I don't think that, I don't know. It's hard to tell where we at. It seems like there's things are getting, are starting to go in the right direction when you have parents showing up at the school board. See, that's the main thing you got to take control back over is with them young people, because you and I ain't going to be here forever. And if you're not, you know, one thing that disturbed me at these meetings don't have any young people. It's all older people. You got to have young people at the meeting because you are discussing things today that they're going to have to live with in the future. And if they're not properly indoctrinated, then they're not going to behave the right way. They're going to roll over, give up everything. You can't plan for the future if you don't have those that's going to be living in the future at the meeting.
Exactly. This doesn't make much sense, does it? Sorry, I was sidebarring.
No, it doesn't.
I was sidebarring. But, yeah, and we're, you know, oh, there's just so much to it. Like I said, it's one of those things where I want to, you know, play some of these documentaries again and, like, refresh my memories on it. And, you know, I actually already did. I uploaded the whole series that Corbett Report did, the 9/11 whistleblowers, and so it's like 2 hours, 7 minutes long or something like that, but he also broke it down into the five parts with the whistleblowers for shorter versions of it, and I need to re-upload those specific parts of it again, because that's what's nice about the parts of it, because, you know, each one is like, you know, 20 minutes or 25 minutes or something long. And that gives a good opportunity to listen to them in parts and then discuss the part, you know, versus playing the full 2 hours just back to back and trying to remember it all. And so that was kind of a cool thing that he did, was breaking it up into parts so that you can listen to it piece by piece. And I would definitely be up for doing something like that again. You know,
well,
but, you know, I have
in
it in my
Louis.
Shows. You know, my first three shows from September 5th on, my first three shows, I played those 9/11 whistleblowers. For anybody that wants to go back into Blog Talk and look up my first few episodes, then I definitely encourage you to do so.
Well, they had a group in probably every major city, but I know they had a group in St. Louis, and it's a guy by the name of Donald Stoll. I used to watch him walk around in University City. But I think I know he's passed away. He's gone. And they used to have the meetings at the library there on the, I think it's Central, Merrimack, because I built that library a long time ago. And people come in and they listen to what had to be talked about and it disappear. And I don't know what the enthusiasm is today, but you're not going to get the information you need. The government's not going to release that information. Even though
well,
it should
no.
be.
Not until everybody's dead, you know.
After everybody's dead.
Until everybody and their grandchildren are dead, you know, then maybe the truth will finally come out.
So I don't know who's behind this. And then we go into another spectrum of thinking. Are these people Earthlings? Are they aliens? Hell, you have thrown every scenario and you laid out every possibility, and we're still faced with this cluelessness. So are these people really aliens, or what are they? I don't know.
I do not know either.
I'm going to get off and let you guys have your show back. Maybe Joe will show up. It's 10:37. And,
I don't think that he can call in now because, you know, our live broadcast had ended at 8 o'clock our time. So I don't think that he can call in after that. So you have to pretty much be calling in before the live broadcast ends, I think, and then beyond, because, you know, we got about 22 minutes left of the recording. So, yeah, this last hour is just the recording. So I think if you're not in before that live broadcast end, then you're not going to be able to call in. So I'm suspecting that's what happened.
So with all that we
know, Joe is going to try to make it tonight.
Yeah, with all that we know, where did it leave us now? where are we at, Laurie?
Yeah, pretty much still powerless to do a whole lot about it other than talk about it and speculate and question, and hopefully, you know, what Richard was talking about with presenting all of this evidence to a grand jury, hopefully something will come of that. I'm definitely interested to see what happens with that, and if, you know, if that ends up, you know, getting buried, as it, and generally people don't even know it even happened.
Well, the mathematics say that the number of people that knew that it happened is less today than what it was 10 years ago. And that's the direction that it's going.
Yeah, I hear that.
Pretty soon it will become a Hansel and Gretel tale. And you know, you just have to shake your head that you got elements in the United States government that would do what we witnessed. Ukraine is another one. There's more to Ukraine than what meets the eye.
Oh, amen. I've been saying it since before it happened. Lori Ann has too.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes we can just predict the stuff. You get so, you know, when you get into the mode of questioning everything, you can almost predict what the next thing is going to be. And then sure enough, it happens. You know, just like with COVID, you know, here we are, and people, you know, have been distracted with, you know, Ukraine and everything else. And, you know, yet here we go. They're drumming up the COVID narrative again, you know, even China, you know, as locked down as China has been, you know, they're having a surge. And then Fauci finally resurfaces after his nap for a couple of months to warn us that a new wave of COVID is coming and America doesn't seem to care. And, you know, it's like, you know, they just don't want this thing to end because there's still enough people out there that believe it. And, you know, Fauci's saying, you know, hey, you know, don't burn your masks yet because we might need them again pretty soon, you know, because this next new variant is coming, booga, booga, booga.
Oh, yeah. Well, see, that worked for them in the last election, 2020, so they're going to use it again. Anytime something that works, it's just like football. If they got a particular play that works, they keep running it. They run it until the defense effectively stop it. So only thing we can do, like you say, is keep talking, and hopefully, if fate may have it, a large enough contingent will rise up and try to make a change. The people that's involved in it all need to be put to death. Because if you don't, they're just going to come back. If they tried something that wasn't working, they tried to vote. If it ever does work, they're going to improve on it and run it again and run it again. So expect for it to come back. It'll be back. It'll be a different variant. With another name, like R2-D2 or whatever.
Like R2-D2. I love it. That's funny.
But you know what, Laurie? I don't understand. Hell, if you're going to do what you're going to do, just go ahead and do it. Why you kill up people? Just do it. You're going to steal. Hell. Why are you having these wars killing up innocent people, men, women, and babies? Just go ahead and steal the money. Go ahead on where you're going and leave us the hell alone. But
true.
Yeah, because whatever money you steal, you know, the Federal Reserve can just print up more to replace it, right? You know, that's what we've seen with all of the COVID trillions of dollars that have been – defrauded left and right, you know, just major bribes and major payoffs and major theft is what it's been. And what we know of the fraud is just skimming the surface of what really transpired. We don't even know the levels of fraud because there was just such an insane amount of money involved in it. It's just, it's crazy.
Well, and like Tiansi was just saying, though, you know, instead of, you know, them murdering and killing all these people, can't we just pay them off? And, you know, to that essence, and spare these lives and the misery.
Yeah, just be gone. But no, they don't want to do it like this. We don't need a federal. The United States don't need a damn Federal Reserve. What you got the U.S. Treasury for?
Exactly.
And, the federal.
You know, that's just another scam too. You know, it's a setup to be like the Federal Reserve is like the worst credit card that you could ever have. You know, completely designed to never be able to get out of debt. And that's. You know, it's just a never-ending killer of the American dollar and buying power.
The interest on the American debt that's going to the Federal Reserve is keeping these idiots alive. I mean, the interest is getting to be worth more than the damn debt.
Yep.
Exactly. And you can't just keep printing more money. You can't just keep going, hey, you know, increase my debt limit because, you know, this credit card is constantly getting maxed out, you know. It can't go on like that forever. And that's exactly what's happening. And it is designed purposely to never be able to pay it off. I mean, if every single American, every single one of us, dug into our couches and grabbed every single penny, every single nickel, every single dime. If we went into our piggy banks and grabbed every single paper dollar, every single piece of money that we have, and we all went to the Federal Reserve and said, here, I want to pay off our debt, we still would not be able to do it.
And you know,
we would never be able
about
to. It's impossible. There's not enough money out there to actually pay off the debt. And plus the interest.
Funny thing about that is that on the Debt Clock website, it tells what each American owes toward the debt. Not, and this also has a breakdown for each taxpayer. But if each American knew that they are responsible because they're a U.S. citizen, that they are responsible for their share, and they knew what that share was. What is it, about $80,000 or $90,000 or something like that? Maybe they would start thinking of whistling a different tune.
Exactly.
Yeah,
but right now,
as soon as you have your baby, you register your baby, get a birth certificate and a Social Security number. That Social Security number is like an asset to the government for them to go borrow money against you as an entity without your consent. You're not even old enough yet. You can't even walk yet, and you're already in debt.
Yeah. And the Federal Reserve just tell the Treasury how much to print up, which is a lending to the U.S. Treasury. Ain't that something that you print up, you really borrow. And the interest goes to this group of people. Now we need to identify these folks. Go picket their yard, carry a coffin back and forth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But anyway, fellas,
yeah.
I'm going to get off from here. I really appreciate the opportunity. I haven't talked about this in a long time. But
take care, Pionki.
I am. I'm going to be aware of knocks at the door. So. I'll talk to you guys later. Bye-bye. Yeah.
All right. Bye-bye.
God bless Pionki. Oh, for fun.
We're both telling. Oh.
You could tell it's Sunday, right? Gosh, you know, it's this is just all part of the recording right now anyway, but as usual, you know, I always have clips upon clips upon clips to play, but now that nobody's really listening, there's no point in playing them, right?
Yeah, we're down to that 10-minute mark for me.
Yeah, what do you got going on this week? Do you have some more school board meeting stuff that you're going to be doing, or what's on your plate?
I do, actually. I have election integrity call to action committee. And so I essentially, between co-hosting and then doing the other show, the co-hosting on that one, and then the one we're doing on Fridays together, doing that show, that's three shows, and Monday night is a committed, so Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Friday, Wednesday. So, yeah, I'm getting maybe one free evening a week. I after we did Friday's show, I skedaddled. I mean, like, I've been, like, running since then, I swear. And it's supposed to be really good Northern Lights again tonight. So I've got my gear out, and I'm going to go see if I can't try to get some decent shots. We'll have to go hike up on this trail in the dark. So I figured we'll be able to get there before dark, and going down is way easier. Those were headlamps. But I'm hoping to get some decent footage tonight. But so we got the Alaska Patriot Network Friday. You'll be joining me.
Yep.
Tentatively yet. No. Yep. No guests right yet. There are. I'm in Alaska. For the listeners that don't know that, my show is on Fridays, Blog Talk Radio, and you can find it there on Fridays, 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. Pacific. And I don't have a guest right now. We've got a special election going on for Congress. So there are like 50 people with their name in the hat. And this is a very short thing. I'll have to send you a script. I took a screenshot. Somebody named Santa Claus is actually running. And I'm not even joking, Lorianna. I'm definitely like sending this to you in the sidebar.
Santa Claus.
I am not joking. So we don't have, as of yet, I've got, like I said, we just had all these people drop their name in the hat. I'm kind of hoping that we'll have maybe even Santa Claus we'll call in.
I don't want to get the kids too excited, though, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So that's kind of what we got going on. We had a fun show last Friday, and I whatever we do, we'll have a good time. You know, it's current events too. We mostly cover do commentary on current events on my show. So until it happens, it's speculation. But we'll have a good time. So thanks for having me tonight. It was a great show. We had some great callers.
Yes, exactly. It turned out to be a very excellent show, which I hope that Richard and Gail both had a good time as well. It sounds like they did. And, and we just continue on. Next week I have Noel Olandy, a.k.a. the Cajun Libertarian, on next week. And he's been doing a lot of cool stuff. So, he has his own video podcast. And he actually recently just had like a libertarian debate between three people. Hopefully he'll talk about that a little bit. And so if you don't know who he is, just look Cajun Libertarian on Facebook or anywhere, whatever, Google search, and you'll find him, the Cajun Libertarian, Noel Olandy. And I'm not exactly sure how you pronounce his last name. Olinde. I don't know if the E is pronounced or not. Olind. I don't know.
well, we're gonna find out.
I'll have to get myself educated on that before I announce him next week on the show. So he should be pretty interesting. And how epic is that going to be? Because it'll be the Lucid Libertarian with special guest Cajun Libertarian with guest co-host
Laughing
Libertarian. And it is Easter Sunday, so, you know, there's some of us that don't really, you know, have a whole lot of plans for Easter Sunday. Some do. So we'll see, you know, how many callers we get or how many people tune in, and hopefully they do. Hopefully by the time, you know, 6 o'clock Pacific run, you know, comes around, all of the Easter dinners and festivities are all done, and then hopefully people are just, you know, kicking back with their full bellies and tune in just to listen and maybe speak up and put on a good show there. So yeah, so I'm going to be doing a little bit of hunting around and figuring out what else to speak about and some topics to talk about with him. And although he is pretty, you know, he's pretty good at talking, so I don't have a feeling we're going to struggle a whole lot with finding stuff to talk about.
Awesome.
So yeah, we got that going on. And meanwhile, yeah, gosh, what do I got going on this week? Definitely some job hunting, seeing what's out there that I can find is a good fit for to apply for, and hopefully with a company that isn't requiring the vax mandates. And yes, oh, by the way, you know, apparently the vax mandates are back for the federal government,
yeah,
along with other places. And so, yeah, we got that whole ball rolling again, that broken record.
Love
it's pretty
God.
Crazy. It's pretty crazy.
It really is. It really is. I'm just, you know.
Like, again, you know, like, let's just be done with this.
Yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't matter how many people have heart attacks or strokes or blood clots or, you know, women have freaky cycles happening or, you know, no, all of that stuff is safer than getting COVID and recovering from it, apparently. That's, you know, they still want to stick with that line.
Yeah, and what's up with this whole administration being, or this, well, false administration, everybody supposedly has the vid at the White House, you know. So stupid. What are they hiding from now?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, if Pelosi was such a believer in the masks, then she wouldn't have stopped wearing her masks, and she wouldn't be like, all, you know, up hugging and shaking Biden's hand and stuff like that. But then it just coincidentally.
She gets the old fart.
Yes, exactly. You know, I mean, if they were such believers in the mask, you know, a month ago, then why aren't they anymore, right? And then, you know, and that just coincidentally coincides with, you know, China saying, no, don't you dare go to Taiwan, Pelosi. We're warning you. And
yep.
Then the very same day, she supposedly test positive for COVID. Like, oh, how convenient. You know? Got to cancel that trip.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
exactly. 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 So,
who else is tested positive?
Jen Psaki just had it.
Oh, yeah.
And Jen Psaki, Pelosi, just a bunch of people. But didn't Joe Biden, and I don't know, I'm pretty sure he'll have it too. But
oh, yeah,
he just had it
thing.
At Christmas, you know. But these pesky little variants.
Yeah, those variants. Like I said, I am thoroughly convinced that these mRNA jabs are made to lower your immune system, not help it. I mean, even here in Oregon,
yes,
a few days ago, Oregon Health Authority reports nearly 1,000 COVID-19 vaccine breakthrough cases. You know, and they're not even reporting like test result cases now. You know, now it's only those that are hospitalized COVID that are being reported. And so even with that, there's 1,000 breakthrough cases. So that really goes to show how effective these stupid COVID shots really are.
Oh, no. Yeah. And we're like out of time, so we can't go on the rant about that. But we can go on a rant about that next time because there's a lot to that. And we've talked about it, but people need to be reminded weekly.
Oh, definitely.
Just say no.
Yeah, we should probably wrap it up. We got like 60 seconds or something, and then the recording ends. So, again, Dahl, always a pleasure to work with you, be on air with you, whether it's your show or mine.
Ditto.
It's always a privilege.
Ditto. Thanks for having me. It was a blast.
Lots of love. Lots of love. I was hoping V could have made it. I don't know. She must not have been able to call in, which is a bummer. I was hoping she would have been, but
I know.
Who knows?
That would have been a treat.
Yes, I was keeping an eye out for her number to show up, but she must have gotten buried at work. That's probably what happened. So we missed her. Oh, well.
Yep, we did. All right, well, I'm going to sign out here, and I will see you on air on Friday.
You got it, yep, and thank everybody for tuning in and listening as well. And till next time, tune in, Lucid Libertarian, next week, 6 to 9 p.m. Sunday. Cajun Libertarian as our guest. Should be a fun show as well. Tune in for Alaskan Patriot Network, Fridays, 3 to 6 p.m. Pacific. And we are out of here. Good night.